You are listening to the Sunday morning sermon series from the Grapevine Church of Christ in Grapevine, Texas. We're a family that is devoted to giving our lives to and living our lives for Jesus Christ. If you'd like to know more, you can check out our website, www.grapevinechurch.com. Thank you for listening.
If you have a Bible, you can turn to Genesis 18, starting in verse 16 is where we'll be. The text for today is a little bit awkward. And it's awkward in the sense that if we've already read ahead, we know what happens. We know the destruction that will take place in Genesis 19. In fact, the story of Sodom and Gomorrah has been told and retold to us time and time again. And so we're going to look at this question, why? Why would Abraham stand with God and argue, and in fact, bargain with God for Sodom and Gomorrah's survival? Could it be that Abraham knew that Lot was there and so he was worried about them? That's a possibility, but the text really doesn't, as we're going to read here in a minute, the text doesn't give us that as an option. We are left to read the text and wonder. And so for the next few minutes, let's wonder together. What is it that this text is saying to us about our faith journey? Because as I've read it and I've reread it, I think that this text does tell us something about our faith journey. And hopefully over these last 4 weeks or so, we have seen that faith is a journey. It has its ups, it has its downs. We have moments of faithfulness, and we have moments of faithlessness. And through it all, something is growing inside of us. And what we talked last week is that something that is growing inside of us is trust. Trust that God will keep his promises. And with every step we take forward, we trust. But I think as we found out, as we've looked at the life of Abraham, we notice this, that faith is a continual wrestling match. It's full of questions. It's full of protest against God, as we've seen this with Abraham, continually asking these questions and protesting God. Yet in all of this, the questions and the protest and the arguments, in all of this, I think what we begin to notice is that God didn't go anywhere. God is still present. God is still in the middle of the journey, in the middle of our questions, in the middle of our wrestling. God does not flee. God stays faithful to us even when we struggle to be faithful to God. God continues to call us forward. And with every step we take, with every moment of faith, with every question that we have, our lives are being molded deeper and deeper into the life of God. So when Paul says in Romans 12, 1 and 2, there we have this renewing of the mind that happens, I think this is what Paul is talking about. As we look at this story of Abraham, we more and more notice in this journey of faith with God that Abraham is being transformed. His mind is being renewed. He is seeing the world differently. He is seeing the people around him differently. He is seeing his life with God differently. And so last week, we left the passage in Genesis 18 with God asking a question. We left the passage in Genesis 18 with God saying to Abraham and Sarah, "Is there anything too impossible for the Lord?" And I think as we move into this next part, we begin to see Abraham answer this question a little bit. And so as we get into Genesis 18, starting in verse 16, we're going to notice a couple things. First, we're going to notice that as the Lord left Abraham and Sarah, that the Lord had other places that the Lord needed to be. We see that there was another purpose for this visit besides just talking with Abraham and Sarah. And what we'll see is that even inside of God's own internal conversation, and we're going to see the writer gives us God's kind of internal conversation, that in that internal conversation, God legitimizes Abraham. God gives Abraham affirmation in this conversation. In fact, this affirmation, I believe, is what empowers Abraham to do what Abraham's going to do in this passage. It's God who says about Abraham in God's own voice, "This is the person of the promise. This is the one in which I said my purpose will be fulfilled. How can I not tell him what's going on?" And so we begin to see that God and Abraham are going to become conversation partners. And I'm not sure how much we think about that, that even us and God are conversation partners. And in this conversation, we begin to see Abraham see people differently, see God differently. And I think also begin to flesh out this question of, is there anything too impossible for the Lord? So if you have a Bible, follow with me. Genesis 18, verses 16 through 33. Then the men set out from there, and they looked towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them to set them on their way. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do? Seeing that Abraham shall become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. No, for I have chosen him, that he may charge his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring about for Abraham what he has promised him." Then the Lord said, "How great is the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah, and how very grave their sin. I must go down and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry that has come to me. And if not, I will know." So the men turned from there and went toward Sodom, while Abraham remained standing before the Lord. Then Abraham came near and said, "Will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you then sweep away the place and not forgive it for the 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it for you to do such a thing, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous fare as the wicked. Far be that from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do what is just?" And the Lord said, "If I find at Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I will forgive the whole place for their sake." Abraham answered, "Let me take it upon myself to speak to the Lord, I who am but dust and ashes. Suppose 5 of the 50 righteous are lacking. Will you destroy the whole city for the lack of 5? And he said, "I will not destroy it if I find 45 there." Again, he spoke to him, "Suppose 40 are found there." He answered, "For the sake of 40, I will not do it." Then he said, "Oh, do not let the Lord be angry if I speak. Suppose 30 are found there." He answered, "I will not do it if I find 30 there." He said, "Let me take it upon myself to speak to the Lord. Suppose 20 are found there." He answered, "For the sake of 20, I will not destroy it." Then he said, "Oh, do not let the Lord be angry if I speak just one more time. Suppose 10 are found there." And he answered, "For the sake of 10, I will not destroy it." And the Lord went his way when he had finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. Now, in this conversation that Abraham has with God, I want you to notice something. There's something new going on here with Abraham. We have seen him argue and protest with God before. We have seen in Genesis 15, Abraham say, this promise of a child has not come yet. When is this going to happen? We've actually seen in Genesis 17 as well, Abraham laughing at God saying, I'm 99. How do you expect me to have a kid? We even saw right before in Genesis 18, Sarah laugh at God about the idea of having a son. And in these past conversations, we notice that Abraham has been struggling with trusting God when it comes to the idea of the promise, when it comes to the idea of the promise of having a son. However, this section looks a little bit different. This section of text, God first invites Abraham into the conversation, as we see in verses 17 and 19, how can I keep what I'm going to do to Sodom and Gomorrah from Abraham? And I think second, what we see is that God invites Abraham into the conversation, and Abraham goes ahead and has the conversation with God. Abraham becomes a conversation partner with God. And I don't know how many of us think of ourselves as conversation partners with God. I don't know how much we take seriously that God wants to have conversation with us. And that God wants possibly for us to ask questions. And as I was reading this text and looking at this and thinking about, this is kind of a new innovation of Abraham's faith. Because now we see Abraham standing in between God and Sodom and Gomorrah. And as I was looking through and I was looking at the New Testament, and there was a couple of stories that came to mind. The first story that came to mind was in Matthew 15, verses 21 through 28 with the Canaanite woman. And if you remember that story, this Canaanite woman comes before God and says, have mercy on me. My daughter is afflicted with a demon. Jesus doesn't say anything to the woman. And in fact, his disciples, we know what they say. This is the typical disciple answer. She's annoying. Get her away. And Jesus has an interesting answer. Jesus says in verse 26, he answered, it's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. So we see this kind of harsh answer by Jesus. But notice what the woman does. The woman sticks around. And the woman says, yes, Lord, in verse 27. Yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. And at that moment, as the woman stands before Jesus and says this, notice Jesus' answer. Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done as you wish. The woman standing before Jesus and hearing Jesus answer her stayed where she was. Stayed in front of Jesus and in front of the disciples who wished her away and believed that her faith could do something new. Believed that her faith could heal her daughter. And in doing that, and in becoming a conversation partner with Jesus, we notice Jesus' answer. So that is what Abraham does here. He leans into the conversation with God, and in this moment, I think we begin to see Abraham's faith in action. And it takes the form of questions to God. These questions envision a new redemptive possibility. It's almost as if Abraham is taking God's question of if there's anything too impossible, and he's taking it for a test drive. And he is imagining that something new can take place even for Sodom and Gomorrah. And when we read Abraham's questions, when we read this kind of bargaining tool that Abraham's going through, it's hard for us. It was hard for me not to think of my daughter, right? And you know this, when it's time for you to put your kids to bed when they're young, and you say, all right, you know, I'd look at Aunt Lee and say, okay, honey, it's you know, 9 o'clock, time to go to bed. And then the bargaining takes place. You know what I'm talking about. Well, Dad, give me like 15 minutes. No, honey, you don't get 15 minutes. Slow pause. She's gotten good. 12. No, honey, not 12. It's 9 o'clock. Well, what about 10 minutes, Dad? Just give me 10 more minutes. Honey, it's 9. You go to bed at 9. Well, what if I want to, and she knows this one works every time. Well, what if I want to stay up and read? I mean, what kind of parent says no to a kid who wants to read, right? And it goes on like that, and it goes on and on and on until finally either I have to ask God for forgiveness or something else. But we understand this, and Abraham is doing this bargaining. But the other part of this is we've also been in those bargaining times in which, you know, we've looked at someone and we've given them a number. Maybe we're looking for a new car or whatever, and we say, well, this is what I'll pay. And the person just looks at us and goes, okay. And what do you immediately think? I shot too high. Dadgummit, right? And we almost have that here. So as Abraham stands in front of God, Abraham says, 50 righteous people. And what does God say? Yeah, okay. And at that moment, you can almost hear Abraham go, no, shot too high. But Abraham doesn't, but Abraham keeps going. But I don't want you to get caught up in the negotiation. While it's easy to get caught up in the negotiation, I don't want you to get caught up in that. What I want you to notice is something deeper. That Abraham is actually hoping for a new outcome for Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham is actually hoping for an outcome in which the innocent can save the guilty. Which goes against everything of this age. In which death, the old narrative of death and destruction, the old narrative of disobedience and destruction can be replaced with something new. And Abraham is actually pushing against. He's actually attempting, hoping, imagining a new math formula that actually one can save the many. And as Abraham is doing this, as Abraham, and we notice as he keeps going down from 50 to 45 to so on and so forth, he's going down. And God, notice what God does. God does not say, okay, we've gotten to far enough. Notice what God says. God actually is sort of promoting this to Abraham. And as they're having this conversation, God is also saying, okay, for 45, for 40, for 30, we notice this happening, and even God is saying, the righteous could save the city. And this is kind of a big deal to me. As I read this, I'm thinking Abraham is beginning this faith in him that he's had, this journey that he's on, this trust that has been building in him with God, has led him to a point in which he can stand before the Lord and say, what about a new outcome for Sodom and Gomorrah? What about it? What about the righteous being able to save the guilty? And as we notice this, the other passage in the New Testament that caught my attention, besides the Canaanite woman, was also the Roman centurion of Luke 7. And if you remember the Roman centurion of Luke 7, he had a servant who was sick and who was dying. And he had some people run out to go talk to Jesus. And as Jesus was on his way, the Roman centurion stops the man, or has some people stop and say, no, you don't actually have to come. All you have to do is speak it. Just speak it and it will happen. And Jesus, as this goes on, Jesus makes this reply about a Roman centurion in verse 9. I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. And even the Roman centurion had this faith. By the way, a Gentile, and not only a Gentile, but a Gentile who oppresses the Jews, right? Has this ability to stand before God and say, no, I don't even think you have to be there. I think that if you just say it, something can happen. He has this in his mind, in his imagination, in his hope that God can do new things. That God is able to do something that is beyond our imagination. And I think that's what Abraham is doing here. As Abraham stands before God, he has gotten to this point in his journey in which he can become a conversation partner with God, and he can, in his faith, believe that God can do the impossible. That God can even save Sodom and Gomorrah. But as we read this, and as we think about our own faith, I'm also reminded that it is incredibly easy for the news of death and destruction that is all around us for our faith to grow weary. It is easy as we look around and as we read newspapers and as we check the internet to be reminded that there is evil in the world and that this evil feels incredibly overwhelming to us. That in fact, what we do, what we say has no bearing on the future. And it would be easy for us to worry more about ourselves, worry more about our own well-being than those around us. But this text pushes against that when it comes to faith. This text pushes against the idea that we worry about our own selves, that our faith starts transforming in us something new, that we begin to see that Abraham's faith hoped for a new math, that the one could save the many. We see Abraham's faith move from being consumed by the promise. Up until this point, Abraham has been consumed by the promise. When he stand before God, he was consumed about, when are you going to do the promise? And at this moment, Abraham goes from being consumed by the promise to now living in the promise. But not only that, living in the promise for others. He goes from worrying about his barrenness to worrying about the destruction of others. Abraham's journey, I believe, has led him to this, to a new way of living, to a new way of seeing, and to a new way of being in the world. And the math of Abraham actually becomes a reality. And where we see that reality is in Jesus Christ. And we remember this in Romans. In Romans 3, 21 through 26, as Paul is writing, he says, "But now apart from the law, the righteousness of God has been disclosed and is attested by the law and the prophets, the righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ for all who believe, for there is no distinction. Since all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, they are now justified by his grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Jesus Christ, whom God put forward as a sacrifice of atonement by his blood, effective through faith. He did this to show his righteousness because in his divine forbearance, he had passed over the sins previously committed. It was to prove that at the present time that he himself is righteous and that he justifies the one who has faith in Jesus." Notice what Paul says there. In the one, Jesus Christ, all guilty, those who have fallen short of God, can now be saved. The one saves the many. What Abraham was hoping for was Sodom and Gomorrah. The faith that had moved Abraham to stand in between God and Sodom and say, "Can't one save?" We see embodied in Christ. And so that's where our faith brings us. Faith brings us to ask these new questions of ourselves and of God. We can now look at God and say, "What are you up?" We look at God and say, "What are you up to in the world?" And faith begins to produce this new way of us seeing the world, of seeing others, that someone is not hopeless, but that through Jesus there is hope. And in fact, the one can save the many. And even more than that, your faith that you have that is moving in you, that is building in you, that is transforming in you, allows you to be the one that can save the many. I don't know how many of us trust that. I don't know how many of us believe that. But I think our call to action is, instead of looking at people and saying they're hopeless, our faith moves us to the new idea that there is hope. And so instead of our faith saying they deserve to be destroyed, our faith says that through Jesus, they deserve to have life. And so like Abraham, we stand in front of people. And like Abraham, we say, death and destruction does not have the final word on you. And we begin the conversations, and we begin to enter into their life, and we begin to pour ourselves into them. And while I know that if you've read Genesis 19, you know what happens to Sodom and Gomorrah. And later on in Genesis 19, Abraham has to stand before the smoldering rubble of Sodom, which I believe is the call to Abraham, the reminder to Abraham of the pertinence of our faith, of the immediacy of our faith, of the desire for us to be in the lives of others so that death and destruction does not happen. I'm also reminded of this in 19, verse 29. So it was that when God destroyed the cities of the plain, I want you to read this part, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had settled. Did you catch that? The one actually saved. It's not big, but we have this kind of, it's a hopeful text. God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out. I think that's a big text for us to remember. That as Abraham was trying to stand before God and say, I believe you can do something new. God did do something new. Lot was saved through Abraham. And if we think about in our lives, the people in our lives today who need the saving grace of Jesus, who need our presence in their life, who need to see the saving mercy of God, who need to hear that they are not hopeless, who need someone to stand before God and pray for them and remember them. Abraham did that with Sodom and Gomorrah, and there are people that we need to do it for as well. Who do you need to stand before God and pray for, and remember, and be in their life? I think faith has called us to that. Faith has brought us to this point to say, God can do a new thing even in fill in the blank. And so when God says, is there anything too impossible? Abraham begins to say, I don't think there is. I don't even think there is for Sodom and Gomorrah. And so when God says it to us, we also say, I don't think there is anything too impossible, not even for my fill in the blank. Our faith moves us to action into the lives of people. It moves us in the highs. It moves us in the lows. It moves us into trust. And in that trust, it allows us, I think, motivates us to go into the lives of others and know that something new can take place. Why? Through the one, through the death and resurrection of Jesus.
You've been listening to Grapevine Church of Christ. Subscribe to our sermon podcast and to our other Grapevine Church podcasts for special behind-the-scenes content. For more information, you can go to www.grapevinechurch.com.